There's a particular conversation that almost no family can avoid and that doctors agree is incredibly important. And yet, most of us don't have this conversation. It's about the medical care we would want if we were dying. WFAE's Michael Tomczyk reports.
To get the obvious out of the way, this can be an immensely difficult conversation. But it doesn't have to be.
In my experience, they tend to go pretty well. I actually enjoy having those conversations with patients.
That's Daniel Miles. He's assistant director of the chaplain department at Carolina's Medical Center's main campus. Of course, he's prepared if the talk does turn emotional. There's a box of tissues on his desk.
We try to keep those handy for folks who come in and have some vulnerable conversations.
The conversation we're talking about is end-of-life care. If we're ever so bad off that we can't make decisions for ourselves, what do we want our doctors and family to do? In Mooresville, Haley Bond is having that conversation. Her boss, attorney Natalie Miller, walks her through it.
If you are terminally ill, permanent coma, severe dementia, persistent vegetative state, okay, do you want to be kept alive on machines if there's no chance you're coming off of them?
No.
Bond is 24 years old, married with two kids. She's setting up a healthcare power of attorney, giving her husband the power to make decisions if she's too sick to make them herself. She's perfectly healthy, so this is hypothetical. Still, she says it was really difficult to talk to her husband about it.
You don't ever want to think that all that.
She starts to tear up.
It's hard to think about, but definitely important.
The attorney, Natalie Miller, has this conversation all the time. It's her job. And yet, it's hard for her family, too.
My husband actually hasn't done one of these, I don't think, because it's hard for him to talk about.
And she's made clear that it's important to her.
It comes up. I've learned as a spouse that nagging probably is not good for my marriage. But yes, we do discuss it. About once a year, I bring it up.
Miller's husband is in good company. Doctors and researchers say most people have not had these conversations. And the Pew Research Center found only about a third of adults have put their wishes in writing, like a healthcare power of attorney or living will.
So everybody agrees it's important, but it's something else to actually follow through on it.
Lindsay Conway is managing director at the Advisory Board, a healthcare consulting company.
And I think that it's still quite rare, to be honest with you, for physicians to be proactively having these conversations with their patients about the importance of advance directives.
Advance directive is the umbrella term for the documents laying out what kind of care you want. Federal law requires hospitals to ask new patients if they have them. Melissa Phipps is assistant general counsel for Novant Health.
Unfortunately, what has happened is that it has become very much a check-the-box kind of thing. So the person who's checking you in, getting your name, your address, your insurance card, they don't have a relationship with you.
And that makes it difficult to start a conversation about death, especially in a stressful hospital environment. Phipps is helping the Novant system reframe this conversation.
Who do you trust to speak for you if you ever lose the ability to make your own medical decisions? We're going to start asking every single patient that question.
She says the goal is to make these conversations standard by the end of the year. Carolina's healthcare system calls in chaplains for the talk. Daniel Miles tunes his guitar before his fellow chaplains sing a devotional during their morning huddle at Carolina's Medical Center.
With every inch of my skin, I'll let the hot sun in and I'll use my hands for love.
When the meeting is over, Rachel Pence and the others are off to see patients.
I have two patients that are requesting advance directives, and potentially they would like to do them, and potentially today is not the day that they would be interested in doing it, so you kind of find out when you enter the room.
The chaplains say about 40% of their patients actually go through with it. Some don't realize what they had asked for, some don't think it's necessary, and family dynamics can play a huge role, says Lance Stell. He's a clinical ethicist for Carolina's healthcare system.
We like to think that all families are loving, affectionate, and supportive, but sometimes they're not. They don't get along with each other. They didn't like the patient very much. Maybe they haven't been associated with the patient for a very long time.
Stell says choosing a healthcare power of attorney who you are close to can help. If you don't choose one, state law lays out who decides. In North Carolina, it goes guardian, spouse, majority of adult children, majority of adult siblings, and so on. If there's no one else, two doctors make the call. Dr. James Tulski is chief of Duke Palliative Care, and he says it rarely comes to that.
The overwhelming majority of the time when someone is seriously ill, we are able to get to an agreement with the family about the decisions to go forward. It's painful, it's sad.
But he says that process is so much easier when families have discussed what they want before they get to the hospital. Chaplain Daniel Miles couldn't agree more. He remembers an elderly woman who was dying, incapacitated, with one daughter appointed healthcare power of attorney, ready to let her go, and three other kids who wanted to keep fighting.
Part of the work that I tried to do was both to support the daughter who wanted to make this decision, was having a hard time, to say, if this is what your mother wants, this is the right decision to make, and you got to live with your three siblings. So it's not an easy call.
The decision tormented the family for about a week.
The daughter did eventually make the call to withdraw the life-sustaining support, and the woman died. So her wishes were honored.
But Miles says if the whole family had just had the conversation together, when their mother could still be part of it, it could have prevented the agony of that week. It also could have saved a lot of money. Now, people get squeamish about this next point, but with rising healthcare costs, it's important. Researchers have found that having these conversations can reduce healthcare spending. Holly Prigerson is director of the Center for Research on End-of-Life Care at Cornell.
What we found was that patients who said that they had talked with their doctor about the care that they would want to receive if they were dying had significantly lower healthcare costs in the last week of life than those who did not.
That was in a study of cancer patients. Prigerson says it found 36% lower costs for people who simply talked to their doctors about what they wanted. To be clear, the reason to have end-of-life conversations is not to save money, but that may be a positive side effect. Dr. Gordon Guyot was involved in another study that found significant savings, this one in nursing homes.
If people are getting care that they don't want, most people, I think, would say that's a bad thing. And if the interventions that people are getting that they don't want actually lead to health care expenditures, that's even worse.
The point of these conversations is to make that choice yourself. For WFAE News, I'm Michael Tomczyk in Charlotte.
End-of-life planning and choices will be the topic of a WFAE public conversation this Thursday evening in Uptown Charlotte. You can find details on this free community forum and register to attend at WFAE.org.